Okay, so welcome to another episode of This Black Girl Podcast. I am your host, Lola, aka Ola.Miss.Lola, without the H. And I am joined here by my lovely co-host here, Janaine. If you could just tell me a bit more about yourself and what exactly you do.
Yeah, of course. Well, thank you for having me. And I am a holistic healer, meaning I have lots of titles under this hat of mine, but I started off as a nutritionist. I suffered from binge eating disorder, and so I thought it was good to heal myself from that by going to get my master's in nutrition. And then it kind of led to understanding more about the self, so I decided to do more holistic approach because to me, counting calories and like really focusing on diet culture was not my thing, and there is more to understand about the human. So I decided to learn more through Reiki and breath work. So I'm a certified breath work instructor, and I'm also a Reiki practitioner. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of do a little bit of everything, but it's mostly looking at the person as a whole, and we're all mind, body, and spirit. So I dabble in a little bit of each part of it.
Okay. So can you tell me a little bit more exactly about like the breath work? Because the only time I personally ever heard of the concept of like breath work and having it like a spiritual connection, you're going to laugh. It's embarrassing. It's literally from The Simpsons when the Homer goes on this whole like spiritual awakening to find his family and he meets the Inuit woman and she's doing the breath work with him and it like inflates his brain. Look, the only concept I have.
I love The Simpsons, so I know exactly which episode you're talking about.
Okay, I'm pretty sure it's from the movie, but you understand the reference.
Yes, yes.
Sorry, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, it's all good. So breath work literally means I practice pranayama, which literally means to control your life force, your breath being your life force. The practice of pranayama stems from yoga. So when we think of yoga, we think of the physical aspects, the asanas, the poses, but yoga is actually a spiritual practice and breath work pranayama is a component of that. So Okay. It pretty much helps you to relax your body. If you're talking simply scientific, it triggers your parasympathetic nerve, which induces like the relaxation, all the endorphins to help you like connect with your body. But on a spiritual level, it helps you to bring more life force energy. So I think you've heard chi. I'm sure people have heard of chi. Helps you bring more chi into your system, clears out your auric field and just helps you to connect on a deeper level spiritually and also helps to open up your third eye as well.
Okay. So you said that like you started this journey just because you wanted to, I guess, heal yourself from, you said you had a binge eating disorder.
Yes.
Would you say that's similar or the same to like the typical binge and purge, or can you tell me like a bit more about that part and that process?
Yeah. So binging is different from purging, like binging and purging, because there's no purging to it. And you kind of lose control when you're binging. So let's say if you have a high stress day, and what happens is because you're repressing your emotions and your feelings and you don't know how to cope, you kind of lose control and you start eating, let's say, a bag of cookies and you kind of blank out. And next thing you know, you're like, what happened? And then you feel guilty because you're like, oh, I'm such a bad person for doing this. This is horrible. So it's like this cycle. So you continue to do it because you're such a bad person. So your self-flagellation. And it's like so bad. When it comes to bulimia, it's about control. But there's also this aspect of losing yourself. But again, there's no purging when you have BED, which is binge eating disorder.
Okay. So it's kind of like, I guess those, and I can definitely relate to those moments where, like, for example, you're sitting in front of the TV and you're watching something so good and you're like eating popcorn or you're eating chips or whatever. You do it at the movies when you buy your big ass, you know, bucket of popcorn, and you get to the good part and you want to grab something and it's empty and you're like,
So that's a little bit different. So that's more
Okay.
mindless eating. So the
Okay, so
thing
what's
is
the,
the
yeah, I was
difference.
gonna say, so what's the difference then?
So when it comes to mindless eating, it's literally you lose focus because you're paying attention to the TV or you're on your phone on Instagram. So it's not a really emotional component. It's not like you
Okay.
are like doing this because you literally lose control. Mindless eating, it's more like, I mean, everybody does it. You grab some popcorn, you're watching TV, your brain's like, let's focus on the TV, but your hands are still like doing this, right? But
Yeah.
there's no like connection to the food. When it comes to binge eating, it's like your entire body's like shut down and you're like going in your mind and you're calling yourself all these bad things and you feel like you're such a horrible person. And so the food makes you feel a little bit better. So it kind of takes away the pain, but then you kind of literally blank out, and next thing you know, it's completely gone, and you're over there still crying or still very emotional. Because when it comes to a lot of eating disorders, it's also a mental health issue,
Okay.
and their coping strategy is either to control, which comes with anorexia, they need that sense of control, and the way they control is controlling their food, or they're repressing their emotions. So when you repress your emotions, it has to come out some way, and to make yourself feel like even keel, food becomes your coping mechanism.
Right. Okay. So it's more like emotionally eating because, you know, I don't know, you had a bad day, stressful day, something horrible happened at work, personal life, relationships, whatever. And the food is that, like, that comfort food that, like, you know, you'd have like a comfort blanket or a little stuffy or whatever, but instead it's food.
Exactly.
Okay. So I want to kind of pivot then to the concept that you've mentioned, I guess, in terms of like the work you do. You also talk about like healing your child. Now, does that component of, I guess, like emotional eating and things like that, how does that feed into, I guess, a more childhood habit? Is that something that has to root from childhood, or does it root from like, can it root from other places?
I mean, of course, it could root from other places, but a lot of times I notice that it's from your childhood and it could be from when you're really young or it could be from your teenage years. And I mean that because we develop this relationship with food from a very young age, and how it develops is we mirror what our parents teach us. And when our parents tell us, don't eat that, certain kids could take it to heart and they think, oh, I'm doing something bad. So strike
Okay.
one. And
Okay.
then they feel this pressure. Or it could be like you experience abandonment, and the only thing that actually brings you comfort is cookies or cupcakes, and that makes you feel good. So what you're gonna do when you get older? Well, the only thing that makes me feel good is food. So whenever I feel those strong emotions within me, the only tactic I have is to turn to food. So I find that a lot of people who suffer from eating disorders, binge eating, or even emotional eating, there's either a level of anxiety or depression, or their inner child's asking them to turn to the behaviors that they are used to turning to because they don't know how to cope properly.
Okay. And would there be like, I guess, other instances where like those like inner child moments, I guess, would get brought out in adulthood?
Yeah, all your triggers.
Okay, fair enough, fair enough. Okay, so like, so any, well, I don't want to say anything because I'm pretty sure like there's obviously people who experience stuff more in their adult life who, you know, develop new triggers, but essentially, okay, you're right though, definitely, because I'm trying to think of my own and I'm like, yeah, those sound like childhood things.
Yeah, I mean,
So yeah,
you could develop triggers throughout your entire life, right?
right.
But the deep ones, a lot of times stem from your childhood. But because you don't realize it, it kind of compounds. And eventually, if you are open to it and decide, okay, you know, I need to really find out what's going on, and you start digging and digging and digging, a lot of times it's either, again, the small child or the teenager that is like, I need your help. I need something.
Okay. So like let's say there's somebody who's struggling. I don't know, I'm gonna make up a persona right now. Let's say that there is a young woman struggling who's in their like mid to late 20s, maybe early 30s. They have certain toxic traits that they don't realize are toxic traits because that's how they were raised, that's what they saw, so that's what they replicate. How would the beginning, I guess, go towards like doing shadow work and understanding yourself and unpacking those things, with like how, I guess, how would it begin? How would that kind of even that like light bulb moment to be like, you know what, maybe I should be working on myself and working on this.
Well, like you said, they need to realize there's something wrong. They may not know what it is exactly, but if you sit there like, I'm perfect, ain't gonna work. Like, nothing's gonna work unless you're ready for it or open enough for it to realize, like, I have an issue. You may not realize what the issue is exactly, but you have to have at least that stepping stone, like, I need to fix something in my life. I may not know what it is exactly, and be open to the process. Because if you come here like, ain't nothing wrong with me, I can't help you.
Well, no, and that's fair because like I've definitely had different friends that I've seen, like, you have certain blockages for moving you forward, or you're repeating the same problematic issues and you want to break the cycle, but you don't know how. Like, I've normally just been the person that's like, why don't you maybe seek out counseling, talk to a therapist to try and like have some guidance in unpacking their like issues. And I've always kind of been rebuffed with like, oh, they're not going to do a good job, or yeah, I'll get to it when I feel like it, or I don't really like, the sometimes in denial, I don't really think I need to do all of that. And it's like, sometimes you really do.
I mean, I personally know a lot of those kind of people, but the thing is that unless somebody is ready to seek out help or to actually change, because a lot of people say, oh, I want to change, I want to change, I want to change. And I'm like, oh, here's some steps. And they're like, oh, no, that's too much. Then I'm like, you ain't ready to change.
Okay, I feel so deep, so redeemed right now because like I personally feel like for myself, I tend to be a solution-oriented person. So if somebody comes to me with it with just like a problem, general issue, I will normally, it's like it's my nature to normally suggest like ways to improve it, Whereas somebody's just like, I just need you to be an ear. Just like I don't want a suggestion. And I've been working on myself, I guess, to more like read the room. But at the same time, I don't want to be rude and be like, I'm tired of hearing your same ass, dry ass problems with you actively also not working on yourself to improve the situation.
So I have a question for you then. Why do you feel like you need to fix everything?
Because I used to be a people pleaser, and I definitely, with the work of my therapist, I've been working better at like breaking down those boundaries or establishing those boundaries and breaking down those like old habits of, trying to fix things to make people happy. And people need to be like, some people just want to be miserable. And now I'm at a point where if I see you wallowing, knowing that you kept yourself there and you weren't trying to do stuff, and when you would ask for the little help or suggestions, I gave it to you, you didn't do it, hands off. I'm not a lifeguard no more.
Exactly. And
So,
I think that's very
yeah.
important because I used to be that way. I used to be like, I have all these tips and tricks for you to do. Let's do this. And after I'll get upset. I'm like, you're over here complaining. I'm helping you out and you're not listening. But it comes to a point where you have to just drop back and be like, if you're happy or if you're okay in this situation, it's not my job to fix you. That's up to you. And when you're ready to change and you want to actually listen to my advice, then I'll give it to you. But it has to come from a place of observance and just falling back because being a fixer is also another problem because you're crossing boundaries, their boundaries, because they only want you to listen.
Yeah.
They don't want you to find a solution. That's very mind driven. So at this point, I'm like, I'll give you some advice if you want it, and then I'll let it go because it's up to them. It's not up to me to do the steps, to do the work. So you have to get to a place where you're okay with just listening to them. Do you mind if I curse?
Oh, yeah, of course. Please curse all you want.
To bitch and moan, because that's what where they're at. And I have to meet them where they're at. Does that affect my life? No. Because I'm not fixing you. That's not my problem. That's your own problem. I mean, for sure. And if their bitching and moaning gets on my nerves, well, that's a signal for me to drop my boundaries saying, listen, you've talked about this a million times, and honestly, I don't want to hear it anymore. So you could take it to somebody else, or if you want to go to a therapist, they'll gladly listen to you bitch and moan, but that's not my problem. So you have to drop your own boundaries when it comes to that too.
Fair enough, because like even... like, I want to personally feel like I'm not perfect, but I've definitely gotten better. Like, I caught myself in a moment where a friend was just, like, doing some general errands related to, like, their job. And I said, like, oh, you know what would be, like, a nice side project when you're in the moment or something? You could do A, B, and C, and it would get you some great kudos, and it would be a good benefit. And their response was just, like, I ain't doing all of that for them and blah, blah, blah. And I had to like kind of reiterate myself. And I said, wait, look, listen, I said, when you feel like it, don't think I'm trying to pile on responsibilities, because they're that kind of person where if they could get away with doing the bare minimum, they would. And I don't blame anybody. Nobody should dream of labor. But at the same time, sometimes the bare minimum is not enough.
Yeah, I mean, again, that's their choice. That's their life. And trust me, I was just like you. I'm not saying I'm perfect. I am not perfect. I'm still human. I still have my moments where I'm like, ooh, let me stop right here.
Yeah.
But just coming to the realization, like, giving all my effort to give you advice makes me tired. So sometimes I'm like, all right, I'll listen to you. Is all you want? Okay, cool.
Right,
and sometimes I even ask my friends or my family members, do you want me to listen or do you want me to give you advice? Because I could do either or. Just let me know what you need and then I'll fall back.
Fair enough. It's funny because like I've been more that I've been kind of like aware of that moment. And now I talk to like certain people, like family members, friends and stuff. It's wild to see how people, I guess, used to perceive myself. Like some people will specifically call me because they know I'm a fixer.
Mm-hmm.
And they expect to call me and like tell me, vent their problems in hoping that like I will come up with this whole plan by plan solution. Like I'm going to help you do this. And in the background, they're like, yes, yes, you know? Whereas some people literally would just talk to me just to talk. They didn't want anything from me or whatever. But now they'll have like a moment where they're talking and I'll just throw out just a random piece of like, well, why don't you do this? And they're like, you knew this whole time? And I'm just like, why do you think I was dumb?
Right. So
it's entertaining, but it's also like, it's very interesting. It's very interesting when you kind of take that step back, you see how people see you. It's very interesting.
So question for you then, if you don't mind me asking.
Yeah, of course.
Have you ever always been the fixer in your family?
Sort of. No. And I mean that in the sense that like, if there was like, an event to host, party to throw. I remember there was a time where like my mother had to pick up my aunt from the airport and she was like stressed because she was like, the house isn't clean enough. And like my brother and I are like cleaning the house top to bottom in 45 minutes flat, sweating. Like I've been that person.
Yep.
to like almost, I almost want to say like make the impossible possible. And I don't know if it's a combination of not liking to hear no and a combination of the people pleasing, but I know it's a percentage in there.
Yep.
Yeah.
So I'll be all in your business, but have you
Sorry,
ever done inner child healing?
not all the way.
What does that
Not
mean?
all the way. I have definitely unpacked certain things from childhood and like those little lingering things that build resentment, because I do carry all, I don't want to say a lot, but like depending on the person, a lot of resentment for certain people and or certain things. And so I've definitely started unpacking like where that comes from. Why do I feel this way? What can I do to kind of like be able to let it go? See different viewpoints from it rather than a negative, turn flip it into a positive, have forgiveness and things like that. But it's been a process, it's not done, but I've started.
This is me just this is just me. I do this, so I'm sorry if I overstep my
Yeah, go
boundaries. Because I want you to re-ask your inner child, do they enjoy being the fixer, or is it just a survival te I mean, technique tactic?
ahead.
You don't have to answer right now.
No,
I'm just
I'm thinking about it because it's a good question. I don't think it was a survival technique. But at the same time, I don't like being stuck as the fixer. And the way I guess I've been slowly shaping my life now, where I can just show up and me as I am without doing 10,000 different things is good enough. And it's hard. It's hard, but it's coming. It's coming and it's been there. And I'm able to do that in certain places, and it's been amazing. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, because I've noticed as for myself as well. To me, being the fixer was a way just to quote unquote survive because I had to be the adult from a very, very young age. And so I was always the one, I mean, I figured out how to fix like washing machines just because no one else was doing it. So
See, no, that never reached my childhood, thankfully. Thankfully. Go on.
but it comes from like a sense of needing to feel loved and appreciated on my part. I can't speak for you. But to me, it was like, okay, if I fix you, then maybe you'll show me more attention and I'll get more love from you. But that's all my inner child like trying to be out here. But a lot of people I've noticed when they're fixers, it's because something didn't seem quite right. And they felt it was their responsibility to fix stuff. And people decided to like rely on those people because like, oh, they know everything. They got you. If I need them, they'll be there to fix my problems. And for some people, it is their inner child. Some people eventually they grew out of it, but it's also a whole boundaries issue as well, lack of boundaries.
I definitely can say it's a lack of boundaries. I can definitely say it was stemming from, I don't want to say low self-esteem, but I want to say it was poor self-esteem, because my self-esteem, it was there, but it wasn't all the way
There, yeah.
there, where it should be, and it's funny because now like that I'm older, I can recognize that like I have high self-esteem, I value myself, I can look at myself and be like I'm this, that, and the third, and a bag of chips and the soda on the side. Whereas before I'm like, so why am I not bringing this into other places, into other
Right.
things where that confidence is, I guess, a little bit shakier.
That makes
And
sense.
yeah, and that's something that's still a work in progress, because I still notice in other aspects, like the confidence isn't where it should be.
And that's fair, but the good thing is, like you were saying, it's a work in progress, which is the
Of course,
beautiful part.
yeah.
And I know like people are like, "Oh, I want to get healed like right now," or things I want things to change right now.
Yeah.
But it's a process. It's a lifelong process. That's why we're here, to learn to heal. And you're going to think I'm crazy, but to actually enjoy the healing.
No, it's good. Trust me, it's good. Once you get out of I don't want to say I did my full shadow work, but I definitely dug into a deep shadow and got out of it. And now that it's I've gotten past it and I sit back and I look in moments that would have normally dragged me down, I would have spiraled, would have been a mess. I just sit back and laugh now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just this is hilarious. Old me would have killed you or themselves or somebody else. Now I just laugh. Or what actually surprises a lot of people, especially my mother, because the generation above us and the boomer generation, they got a lot of work to do and they're very much so in denial of doing so.
Yes, agreed.
And like you said, people will work on their issues at their own moments, but it's funny to see when certain things happen or come up or whatever toxic situation comes up, it'll get brought to me oh, can you believe so-and-so did this? And I'm like, yeah, I can, because A, B, and C. And I'll outline, I can see the problems. It's like unlocking a code where you can just see everything. You see everything so clear as day that you would never see it before. And I just said it oh, it's blah, 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 blah. And they're like, oh my God, you're right. How come I've never seen this? I've known this person for decades. And I'm like, yeah.
Are you more introverted or extroverted?
I'm ambivert.
Yeah. Which one do you lean towards more?
I used to lean towards being more extrovert. Mm. Nowadays, I'm way more introverted.
I found that very interesting because to me, by my observations, introverts are the ones that sit down and observe. I'm introverted, so I just observe people's behaviors. So I'm like, okay, just check. It's quietly in my mind. And the extroverts are the dogs. Yeah, everything's great, blah, 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 blah. But I find it very interesting that you thought that you were more extroverted, but yet you're still taking these little notes. That's very interesting to me. I like the brain how it works.
I think it's the ambivert in me because my social battery can depend on the person, the situation, the place. So if it's running low, I just wallflower up and I sit back and I just start watching and I start observing things and okay, I'm going to note that for later, this for later, that for later. And it definitely would help for certain situations, jobs and stuff where I run into somebody and I remember a characteristic or something that they were doing so that the next cycle, if I see them again, I'm like, oh, hey, Susan, how are you? And they're like, how do you remember my name? I feel so bad because I don't remember yours. I'm like, I know you don't. I'm just a passing moment to you. But I love tripping up people like that.
It's a little superpower of yours.
Yeah, just a tiny bit. So getting back to the shadow work and healing your inner child and things like this. So let's say somebody recognizes, hey, I have issues. I need to start working on myself. What do you suggest would be the first step or the next best step once they know, I know I need to work on myself, but I don't know where to start?
I think it's a case-by-case thing because it depends on the person. For me, for a lot of people that I work with, I've noticed that it could be a 50-50 split, that sometimes I go more inner child work. And other times I go shadow work. When it comes to inner child, I feel like people are more open to it. I've still had people who resist, but they're more open to it because it's their inner child. So you always get to play and find joy with inner child. It's not always about this traumatic event that happened to me as a child. It could be we're going to have some fun here. Yeah. When it comes to the shadow, it's oh, snap. I am not ready for this. I don't want to face this. And a lot of people, especially when it comes to shadow work, have repressed so much that they don't even remember what's going on or what happened. So for the people who are more open and they're like, okay, this happened, but I don't want to deal with it. I'm like, okay, maybe it's time to deal with certain things. But if like, I don't remember nothing, okay, let's go with the inner child first, see like what's going on there. And once you feel like more of a connection, we could start slowly moving towards more shadow work.
Okay. And like for people, I guess for people who are listening and an audience in general, I don't think I've ever had anybody explain and define exactly what shadow work is. Like, I feel like if you're like connected spiritually, you kind of like you hear it and you're like, oh yeah, I know what that is. But can you like define it?
Yeah. So first, the shadow is an aspect of yourself that basically everything that you don't like about yourself, every repressed memory, your shadow carries for you. And that's why you don't like it, because it holds all your baggage, right? So okay. Shadow work is about going through the darkness, and it can happen in so many different ways. Like some people journal with some questions. Some people do like hypnotherapy, so they're in more of a calm state and they go into their subconscious mind. Some people go to spiritualists. I actually went to a shadow work retreat back in October.
Okay, cool.
For my birthday, nothing but tears.
But I was gonna say for your birthday though, like, okay.
Nothing but tears. But that was more like a spiritual Dr. Afi. He had the spirit come through him and like basically tell you what's going on, what's wrong. And you're like, oh, damn.
Okay.
Yeah. So it really depends on what your specialty is. And surprisingly enough, I think that Reiki can actually help with shadow work, because Reiki can bring up certain memories stuck in your subconscious, bringing it up to light. And it only brings up what you're prepared to face. So let's say if you have a sexual assault memory that you buried deep, if your spirit feels like it's time to deal with it and you're doing a Reiki session, it actually might come up in your memories. And then you can start doing the journaling, and then you can go to therapy, or you could just do what speaks to you the most. But it's really about going through all the pain, feel all the emotions, crying, and finally being able to release all of it. Because what we don't realize that we repress a lot, especially in this society where we're told to be strong, don't cry, yada, yada, yada. But when we're not crying and we're repressing, we're basically stuffing everything inside of us, not only in our emotions, but if we're going to speak more spiritually side, all the energy is like stuck within us. And that's why our behaviors tend to get erratic. Either we fall into depression or anxiety or turn into food, because we are not managing our own emotions. So when you're going through shadow work, it's like, yeah, I have to face like I'm mad at my mother because she did X, Y, and Z. And just by saying that, you're releasing it, because you're admitting it, that you're upset. So what's the next step? Well, it depends on where you want to go. If you try to speak to your mom, you have to have no expectations of her reaction. You just have to do it for yourself. Or you could just write down in your journal and just write it out. It really depends on what you want to do or how you want to do it.
And can you explain to me specifically what Reiki is?
Yeah. So basically, everything's energy. We're energy, right? And Reiki basically calls in like universal energy through your hands. So when you get attuned, kind of opens up some parts of you. And all you really do is have this universal energy come through your hands and help with your auric field and different parts of your body energetically. And that's why it just removes negative energy. It cuts energy ties. It does a lot of different things.
Okay. Because like when you were talking about it, you were talking about energy, like my mind literally flipped to my physiotherapist that I've been working with, because she also is a yoga instructor, and she focuses on more of, aside from just the asanas, like more of the spiritual side. So she, like, during our sessions, she's teaching me little things about, like, you know, like energy and the importance of breathing and grounding yourself, and how, like, if you're tense or if you're like if you're tense, it can knot up parts of your body.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't release that tension, it will, like, essentially, like, inflame the body and, like, further injure the body, prevent motion and things like that. And so she was explaining that how each part is connected.
Yes.
So when you're talking, I'm like, okay, that
Yeah.
reinforcement, that reinforcement of knowledge, because, like, I don't know, I'm the kind of person, I don't know, maybe if it does stem from, like, that people pleasing or whatever, it's just like, if I do feel tense, like I normally tend to tense my body to the point that, like, if I'm doing something, like, people have to be like, bitch, breathe. Like, and I'm like, right. But kind of even flipping back into the breath work, can you explain more, I guess, how the breath work fits into all of this now?
So just like Reiki, when you are breathing and your parasympathetic nerve gets triggered, it helps you to relax. When you're in a relaxed state, that's when you're actually able to connect with yourself, right? And when you do, sometimes memories are able to like come through. And people cry. A lot of people have cried during like breath work exercises because these breaths are like releasing like the pain that you're carrying so hard. Just like you were saying about your body, it helps like detox the body and helps you be in your body and actually feel everything. Like everything is connected. So just because it's a breath, it's like a somatic therapy. So somatic therapy is the same process where your energy, everything that you carries within your body. While breath work is a type of somatic therapy where it helps to release the tension within your body, so you're able to release it and just let it go finally.
And I guess, like, is there it would you put it on par, I guess, with like meditation?
Yeah,
Or would,
breath.
okay.
Yeah,
Okay,
breath
so
work is a type of meditation. It can be a type of meditation.
okay, because I just wanted to know, like, is it similar? Is it different? Because I know, especially with like meditation, people do it very differently. Like, I have a little girl, and I try to encourage her to meditate, and like she calls it belly breathing, and I'm like, great, great, that's like, keep it up. I want you to be a happy child, please. And then, like, even my partner, like, he likes meditating. And he has, like, those videos where they'll be like, imagine yourself as a mountain and imagine yourself tall like the mountain and blah, blah, blah. And like, that's great. But I don't know, it doesn't always line up with like what I feel is, like, I guess, I don't want to say relaxing for me, but I guess more of like what you're trying to teach in terms of like recentering your energy, releasing, like, negative, stressful, tense energy, and just like rooting yourself and kind of like centering yourself. So, like, I don't know, I guess, how long would like a normal breathwork session be, just like on average?
I would say two things. It depends what you want to do. If you're
Okay.
trying to de-stress, get back to center after like maybe the anxiety episode, just 5 to 10 minutes will help you out. If you're trying to go deep, 30 to 60 minutes is gonna really like flush things out. But it really depends because I think 5 to 10 minutes is good just to like trigger the parasympathetic nerve. But it takes a while, especially if there's resistance to feeling the feels, then a good 30 to 60 minutes.
Okay. And then random question I want to put out there, because I'm like so curious now. I guess, what would you say, without like, violating, risking patient confidentiality, you can even say it was you or whatever, I guess, what would be like the most intense or like wildest session with like either a client or yourself or something, like, moment that you've had while doing this work and being on this journey?
I mean, I won't talk about anybody else. I'll talk about myself. Now, the healing journey, because it's been a lot. There has been a lot. But I think for myself, I'll speak about the shadow work retreat because I went in there thinking, there won't be that much work. I've done a lot of work on myself. I've been in therapy for so many years. I'm good. And that first day, we had to look at our baby pictures and tell our child self that we love them. And during this whole time, spiritual Dr. Afi was telling our whole life, and I was just there like boo-hooing, hooing, snot nose, just like broken. I got back home. It was like a 3 or 4 hour ordeal. Wow. The next day, my mom calls me because I'm in Sedona and I live in Maryland. In Sedona. My mom calls me and she's like, what's going on with you? Like, your energy's all wrong. Like, you feel like you're depressed. I'm not depressed, Mom. I just had a rough night. And on my birthday, we went to this place called Bell Rock. It's an energy vortex. Mm-hmm. And so he was doing his thing. He was doing his thing. And when I said, I screamed like bloody murder. But after that, I felt so good. Wow. I felt so good. And we were having lunch. And one of the facilitators, she looked at me and she was like, I'm proud of you. Because when you came in here, you were so tightly wound. And I'm seeing you right now and you're a whole different person. And I'm like, girl, because I cried so much. I cried so much. And I think all my business was out there. I mean, I didn't mind because I knew that was the purpose of the healing. But to know that there was so much hurt still within me that I was carrying was bananas. And that's why I think this work is so important, because healing is continuous. And even though we've been through many years of therapy, there's more things to like go through. But when you actually deal with it head on, I mean, in the moment it sucks because you're like, oh my God, what the fuck? Afterward, you're like, it wasn't so bad. Like, I survived all this.
Right.
Like, this is part of my success story. So
I like that. Yeah.
I'm like, this is good. This is beautiful. So it's all about like changing your perspective. It's not always, I mean, the shit you went through sucked.
Yeah.
But it builds you into the person who you are meant to be. And when you move to a place of acceptance, that's where the magic happens. Like, yeah, this, it sucked, but it made me who I am. And that's a beautiful experience.
Nice. I like that. Okay. Well, we're almost at time, but I want to let our listeners know, because like you assist and facilitate in this work for people, you know, who are maybe starting their journey, they're in their journey, but they need guidance. They need a hand to hold, you know, a shoulder to cry into, whether digitally or in person. Could you just let our listeners know exactly like how they can connect with you and to learn more about what you do, as well as to like really get in touch with them?
Yeah, definitely. So you can find me on Instagram at moonlotus.co. I'm on TikTok at moonlotus.co. Or you can find me out through my website, moonlotusco.com.
Okay, perfect. And can you give us your beautiful laundry list of exactly like all the works that your services you provide, I guess, just to be more specific?
So I am a nutritionist, but I'm going to tell you right now, I hardly speak about food. I like to dig in deep into your inner child work, into your shadow work, to so you could understand why you do the things that you do, and so you could release all of that. So we may speak upon mindful eating, but I'm not telling you what you're going to eat. And then I do breath work, I do Reiki, shadow work, and inner child healing. So that kind of like encompasses everything that I do right now.
I love it. Okay. Well, again, thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate this. This was a great talk. This was a great talk. Definitely. I'm going to have to like start sending you like little side emails and be like, girl, you never believe it.
Do it.
I will. I appreciate it.
I'll look out for that.
Okay. Definitely. Trust me. I'm going to, again, follow her on moonlotus.co on Instagram and on TikTok. And then your website is moonlotusco.ca.
.com.
Oh, sorry. .com. I take
yes,
that.
Yes. It's okay.
But with that being said, thank you again for joining me. Again, my name is Lola. You can find me at ola.miss.lola. You can follow the show page at This Black Girl Podcast on Instagram or This Black Girl P on Twitter. Thank you again for listening. And I look forward to seeing you all again next week. Take care.